Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Well, thank you.
Oh, tonight we got them. Goldie the Sulk and JC.
And it starts right now.
Oh, welcome back to another episode of A Typical Disgusting Display, a podcast for writers by writers who hate writing. What a week. Oh, what a week. What a week. First of all, out there on the front lines. Oof. Picket lines.
Oh, wait.
Wow.
First joke of the day. First joke of the day.
No, you're not supposed to do that, JC. That was real. If you were on Beverly Boulevard between 10:15 and 11:30, wow. I was going apey out there. So
were
still
you
tired.
Walking or were you like leaning on a wall kind of with a Gatorade infusion into your arm? Just trying to survive being outdoors for 40 minutes.
That's the real first joke of the day right there.
Oh, I get double slammed. Holy shit. I don't know what you all are talking about. If you could see my shoes, worn through.
Yeah. People are like, wow, that guy must have been out here a while. Look at him.
He's
yeah, exactly. So threadbare. Look at that slob. He's been clearly walking in a circle every day.
Well, you did get more positive media coverage than almost anyone for the strike.
There
was an article on Deadline Hollywood. Oh, yeah, did you see this, JC?
Yes, I did.
Deadline Hollywood, for those not in the know, is sort of our local newsletter for those in the business. The business is show business.
The business of no show.
So whenever you hear someone say the business, they're excluding you and what you do. From. Yeah. There's one business, and it's what we do, not what you do.
No business like show business.
There's something called Deadline, and they reported that one Alec Chamomile Sulkin.
What does that even mean? Is that my
that's your middle name?
Isn't it? I love it.
I thought that was your middle name.
No, my middle name is Darjeeling.
That you faced down the AMPTP single-handedly. You gave up your deal. You said, I will not take your money any longer until this action is over. So
don't remind
kudos
me.
To you, sir.
Yes, so what Goldie is referring to is that Seth? Our
Seth,
Lord and Savior. Seth decided very, courageously. Seth MacFarlane decided to step away from all of his shows, not only the writing, obviously, but even producer duties. And he urged his showrunners to do the same, which, of course, we said, of course, boss. We were going to ask you.
And you fought him tooth and nail.
Yeah, I fought him just tooth. I didn't go all the way to nail. But yes, so we all stepped away, and it was funny because I remember somebody.
And then you get the credit, even though I stepped away weeks ago. Yes. There was no media swarm around the fact that nothing. I had decided Zero. You pencil down meant pencil down. There is no difference, by the way, between striking and working. Because nothing ever happens anyway. So, you know, I forget who the quote is from, said, Hollywood is the only town where you can die of encouragement. everything is always on the verge of happening and then never does. It's like one giant pre-cum of a town. And so when you're like, oh, we're out marching, it's like there's so little difference. The only difference is no one is writing down what we're saying.
Yeah.
Right.
No, that's true. And we're walking. Which is a huge difference.
You're outside.
But Goldie, you said there was no press about you. Wasn't there a big article day one, United We Strike?
Oh, God.
How dare you.
Yeah, so taking the AMPTP down, you're right, staring him down. I didn't finish the story. Seth encouraged us to walk away. And there's not a great ending to the story anyway. Oh. And we walked away. And there was a moment where somebody, I forget who, was sort of asking, like, well, should we be putting a press release together for this? And of course, me, Mr. Not Savvy, was just like, no, that's ridiculous. Like, it's 2 weeks into the strike. Who the hell cares?
The whole notion of a press release is so arrogant. It's like, yeah, you're going to want to hear this, media.
Yeah. But by the way, they
publish this.
They did. Like, there were literally, you know, because I, like most, you know.
Slow self, news year.
Yeah, I know. Like most self-centered Hollywood people, I have myself on a Google Alerts. So whenever, you know, there's some story that mentions me, I get an email about it. There must have been like 30 or 40 stories that's like, Seth MacFarlane and friends, step away from all duties, you know? They got so much press coverage, and it was weird because...
Does anyone know this man who stepped away from his job? Please call our hotline.
I know.
What's so interesting is that it definitely seemed like someone on the inside gave the information, because there's all this information that only somebody on the shows know.
Yeah,
that was in that press.
Doodle Jump movie on hold as Scribe takes up picket sign.
Scribe.
Just trying to think of something Scribe. You'd be working on.
Doodle Jump. What the fuck is that?
Doodle Jump was that iPhone game from maybe
oh, yes.
14
right.
years ago
that's
where
right.
you just, it was a little wow. guy on a trampoline. That's what you were working
Hilarious.
On. There will be no progress on the Doodle Jump movie.
Tetris Scribe steps aside. Yeah,
Kevin Hart plays Doodle.
And The Rock is Jump. So, you know, we walked away. There were all these articles about it. And David Goodman, who I hope still listenings, I hope is very happy because I know he
Moving
wanted
on.
No, you don't want to move on. He wants to talk about it. That all happened. And as I mentioned, the shoes just worn down from striking. But one thing that, you know, in addition to striking, I went to a friend's birthday party, fancy birthday party at the Chateau.
Ooh.
The Chateau.
So someone still has money, even though we're striking.
A couple bucks.
Yeah. So is this someone I know or just...
No, it's not important who it is. But
okay,
so
I entered
into my Uber accidentally when I was heading
Uber
over
Black
there.
Or Uber regular or what?
Uber Black SUV. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I need a lot
still,
of legroom.
You're not trimming back yet.
I'm 5'10". I need all the legroom I can get. So, you know, parties at Chateau Marmont. I accidentally entered into the Uber thing Chateau Marmont, which is a doggy daycare
no
off
way.
Beverly.
<That's perfect. laughs>
And so, like, of course, you don't, when you're in an Uber, you're looking at your phone. And so suddenly the guy's like, okay, here
whisk
we are.
Me there at 9 p.m.
I know. And I did notice that on the, like, the ETA, I'm like, wow, this is going to get there fast. This must be a good route this guy has. Then so I'm sitting outside doggy daycare off of Beverly, and I'm like, I think I entered it wrong. I make it up to the party, fashionably late now, work to my
yes.
advantage. I walk in, I see our Lord and Savior, Seth, and also at the party was Dana Walden. And now some of you out there listening just shook with fear. And others will say, I don't know who that is. Right. Well, Dana Walden is essentially the most powerful woman in the United States, I would say. She is one of the five most powerful people in Hollywood. She has been my, like, overboss because she's set my boss, Seth. She's his boss. Okay. And she's been absolutely a joy and fantastic to work with every moment of my career. I always love seeing her. She's so nice and smart and just easy to talk to. So I walk into this party, but seeing her, it's like you're seeing literally like a Disney princess. Like you walk into the room and you're like, oh my God, it's Belle. She's here. She's here. Can you believe she's here? So I walk in and I'm like gonna go say hi to Seth because he's talking.
Yeah, can I just briefly point out there are certain people who you meet in your life. And you're like, why are they in charge?
Yes.
She is not one of those people.
No.
The second you meet her, you go, of course this person's in charge. And then you lose all the feelings of, I should be in charge. Because you go, well, I can't do that.
Yes. That's so well said.
Oh, that's so cool.
That's so well said. That's perfect.
Like you go, oh, thank God she's in charge. And not me.
And by the way, Goldie, do you know why you're going to be even extra happier that you just said that unprompted? Because the first thing out of her mouth when I saw her was, I love your podcast.
Oh,
I could not believe it. And she actually had a little, I was so excited in the moment that my brain started flooding with whatever dopamine. And she threw out a recent quote, like a specific quote from the show. And I was like, holy shit, it proved
from me or
right
from you. Or from JC.
I don't remember what it was. Maybe it was a bit.
Nice job.
Yeah.
I know. Well, I was so excited and I just couldn't hide it. So she, you know, I'm in a daze the rest of the evening with this information. I'm just really excited.
And now I'm hearing it. I'm a little scared at all the stuff I've said.
She is
also my overboss and that she could pick any one of them and just go like, we don't need him.
Yeah. It's moment when I
it
see
it literally her. Could be her just going like, about me could be like, you know, he lives in Idaho now.
Yeah, I know, right? It's like the emperor in Amadeus yawning at the show. And they're like, if he yawns, it's over. We're pulling the show. So yes, and you're right. When I talk to you about it, it made me realize how Christopher Moltisanti I am in the pecking order of things. It's like, I got Tony, Seth over me, then they got the New York boss. Who's, you know, it's like, I'm so far down.
Yeah, you're more like a Mikey Palmisi.
Don't clump me in Mikey Palmisi. Come on.
Wait, I got one. Just
kidding. You're nothing. You're nothing.
Just getting shot in a creek bed. What's your nothing?
This is...
You're nothing. You're nothing.
Seth Meyers.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Very well used. So, anyway.
Yeah, and by the way, if you're Mikey Palmisi, I'm like the landscaper who gets his arms broken and then is having to do landscaping for every one of my broken
hilarious.
Arms.
Guy.
I love that guy.
He was in one of your top five lists.
Mine. Yeah. He's so funny, that guy. Job. He just kept getting screwed and kept being made to do lawns for free with a broken arm.
Oh, like my nightmare is that Dana Walden thinks of me, and then in her head she's like, is he somehow in with Bob Chapek because they're both bald? and then I'm just done.
Because they're both bald.
That's great.
Because you see, like, a bald guy can't be in charge of Disney. They tried it, and it lasted, like, a year. They were like, ugh.
Yeah, that doesn't fit in the corporate
image.
No, you're not Prince Charming.
No.
So, flooded with enthusiasm hearing this, like, holy shit, I can't believe that. It's the kind of thing I would push Susanna Makos's face out of the way to talk to Dana Walden.
Why?
And we love Susanna. Susanna's one of our favorite people.
True.
I would literally palm her face and push her aside. And she would understand. She would say, you know what? You were right to do that. Dana was here. So as it happened, there's a dinner and I'm seated almost directly across from Dana. Like,
God, she must have been bummed.
She was, I think, I could see her face drop a little.
Like looking around the room going, wait a second, isn't there
Right. Yeah.
This seems wrong.
What A-list actor will I be seated across from? Yeah. Nope. Put on a Jewish face. So I'm across from her. And you know, as dinner's going on, and you two maybe don't understand this, but I'm having a few drinks. And sure. And I'm getting loose and, in my mind, charming.
Okay.
Don't okay. know exactly how it's coming across to anyone else, but in my mind, I'm like, I'm in the zone now.
So any specifics on this or no?
No, zero zone okay. specifics. No, I just remember in my mind, at least thinking that I had made some people around me laugh a few times. So I felt like I'm loose now. So okay, what do I
what
do?
What are you eating, by the way? What are you eating?
There was steak.
Okay.
There was steak. There was branzino.
Ooh.
Branzino.
They had something really good for an appetizer that everyone was fighting over because there was no hand-passed food to start, which was kind of a huge oversight. I can't remember. It was a delicious appetizer.
Okay. So you're across from Dana Walden.
So I'm across from Dana Walden, getting loose. And so loose, in fact, that I circle the table, come in behind her.
What?
Oh,
and
God.
have a she turns, so we have a conversation
that way. I hate this already.
So
I'm so uncomfortable.
Oh no. I gave her a nice free massage first. Women love that. So we're talking and I say, you know, listen, I would be remiss in my duties here if I didn't ask you to come on. Please come on and be a guest on the podcast. And she was incredibly sweet, couldn't have wanted to do it less, and instantly asked me how Tall's doing. You know, she changed the subject very quickly.
I mean,
but Goldie,
I don't want to be on the podcast. So why the fuck would she want to be on the podcast?
It could help her career. But
well,
so,
I applaud you for asking.
Yeah.
But I want to know, because that's not the whole story. There's a little addendum to this story. Seated next to me, not across from me, but next to me was one super writer, Greg Daniels, creator of The American Office, you know, King of the Hill. Like, he's done so many hugely successful things. And
the
I
Samsons.
Know how, he was on The Simpsons, yeah.
Samsons, yeah.
Samsons?
Yeah.
What's the same? Oh, you're saying it wrong on purpose. I get it. Okay. It took me a minute. Sorry about that. So he's next to me, and I'm thinking, like, boy, we, on our podcast, we love The Office. Goldie has cried about it.
On day one.
So again, in loose and in the zone, me thinks like, you know what? We've been having a nice dinner next to each other, getting to know each other. I'm going to ask him to be on the podcast. Again, so slippery, and was instantly like, I've only ever done two of those in my life. Oh boy. And I've been avoiding my good friend Conan's for a while. I'm okay. I back away. I'm now 0-2.
Do you then turn to the waiter, panic? You want to be on podcast?
I should have.
Say what? Anyway, hitting your glass with a spoon.
Who here at the chateau is a struggling writer? So I was 0-2, but Goldie.
Anyone else want a zero upside, non-opportunity, where you could only get in trouble?
Big upside. Huge. The careers we've launched here.
No, I wouldn't let
Henry Winkler was nobody before he came on the podcast. Then
Weird Al.
On our podcast. Weird Al. We gave him theirs. They started in our room, Goldie.
God bless you for trying. Just
for
drunkenly stumbling around asking VIPs if they want to do you a free favor.
Yeah, I know. But so this brought me instantly. I had flashbacks to Scully. If you were listening a week or two ago, you with Mike Scully, you heard the whole story of I asked him to be on the podcast. Thank you, no. A very polite no. Goldie asks him, and then he's there. Yeah. So then I'm in my head now because I missed on Scully.
Striking out left and right.
Exactly. I'm like looking at my bat, shaking my head, you know, kind of doing the...
You're in a slump.
Yeah. I'm going to bust up the dugout phone like Big Poppy. So I got to get somebody soon.
We'll have Goldie follow up.
The key to it.
Yeah, Goldie follow up with Dana.
You explain to them why it's good for them, not for you.
Well, but I told Greg Daniels, I told him about you crying about The Office. I was like, we love The Office.
The most negative review this podcast has ever had listed that as the reason.
Really?
On, yes. On app on iTunes, maybe?
Oh, well, fuck that, idiot. That's not true. I mean, that was awesome.
Yeah. It was the best. Yeah, that was the
best. That was great. Get in touch with you. Well, they don't listen anymore, clearly. But yeah. So,
I mean, I would have loved to have asked these people on our podcast had I been invited to this party.
No, you don't know the guy.
Anyway, okay. Well, it's a guy. That narrows it down.
That was an exciting event. Exciting event. Yeah. And it was the headline there is Dana Walden listens. So Dana, here's a test. If you listen today, send me an email with nothing in it. No headline.
Again,
nothing.
You asking her to do these things.
I want to. Don't
why
you want
to
know
that she's busy? I got to remember to send that email with nothing in it to that guy who asked me to do that favor I didn't want to do. Like, what are you doing?
It's just a test.
I'm saving you from yourself here.
Okay, Dana, if you listen this far,
no,
put a
Dana,
DVD
no,
in an
Dana,
envelope.
Dana,
send
Dana,
it to my
no.
P.O. box.
You do not have to.
Oh, well, anyway, I was excited. But
if you could just ask Bob Iger if he's not busy.
If he could just sign something for my nephew who loves Mickey Mouse.
If you could blow up a balloon with helium with a postcard on it, and then we will tell you how far it goes.
And tape an Apple AirPod to it. We can track it. Anyway, that was a fun event, and it was nice to hear that she listens to the podcast.
That is exciting. So,
thank you.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you very much. And now we've talked enough about that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay. Let's get into the terrible jokes. Let's get in to Johnny jokes.
From Hollywood, here. Janet!
Oh, boy. Wow. A lot up top there. We got Ike Barinholtz coming up next, so stick around for that. But now, let's do some terrible Johnny jokes. Well, did you hear about this? Jennifer Aniston wore a disguise last week in order to go out and shop for her own new beauty brand. Yeah. The disguise? A wedding ring.
Oh.
Got her.
Yeah.
Okay.
One shot, one kill.
That's the nail.
Just to show you, it swings both ways, though. Depression in the United States has reached its highest level in history at one adult in six. Or on some podcasts, that number can be as high as 2 and 3.
God. All right.
I'm pointing that at us.
One shot, yes, one breeze.
Yes. Still. Okay, now we get into the traditional jokes. Dubai, maybe you've heard of them. Dubai. Dubai is planning to build a $5 billion resort inside an 800-foot-tall fake moon. The project will take over 5 years to complete, so anyone who wants to see a fake moon before then will have to date Kim Kardashian like the rest of us.
Okay.
One shot, one kill. I'm taking your joke.
One Here's knife, one. Another,
like last week, big finish. A California man was killed by a passing car while he was attempting to help a family of ducks cross a busy street. You can read all about it in the new children's book, Make Way for Fuckface.
Oh, my God.
Seemed like a nice man. All right. Well, here we go. Republican Senator Tim Scott has announced he's running for president. Political experts say Scott actually has a chance as long as Trump doesn't notice he's bald. The Wall Street Journal has reported that Jeffrey Epstein blackmailed Bill Gates, threatening to reveal the Microsoft Maven had an affair with a Russian bridge player unless Gates donated millions to his charity. Apparently, Gates worried if word of the tryst got out, it could completely destroy his reputation as a giant dork. A lot of words. Fumbled.
Yeah.
It's tough. Too long. Well, have you heard of the band The Smiths?
Remember them?
Yeah.
Well, Smiths bassist Andy Rourke died this week.
He gone!
His bandmates urge fans to celebrate his life with a moment of quiet suicidal despair.
Oh, yes. It's true. Yes. It's true.
That's okay, a smart
I'm
joke.
Gonna do this next one as a Norm.
Okay.
Yeah. Norm.
Yeah.
Norm McDonald.
Yeah.
81-year-old Martha Stewart is on the cover of the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. Those who enjoy it will be even more excited about the centerfold. Dianne Feinstein. I got one more. Should have ended, but you know me.
That was
definite
good.
Closer.
Yeah.
Can't stop himself. Yesterday at a Manhattan restaurant, Woody Allen saved his friend's life with the Heimlich maneuver.
Oh.
Allen said the strangest part was hugging and thrusting against someone who wasn't his child.
Oh my God.
Jesus Christ. You son of a bitch. She was my adopted stepchild. It's a big difference.
The last name is Previn.
Maybe you've heard of the famous cellist.
The nude photos in the tissue box, they came with the tissues.
No one's denying the nude photos. I'm saying you're taking it out of context.
Oh my God.
The context of me fucking my stepchild.
Adopted stepchild.
You guys have never done this before. This should be a segment.
We'll cut all that.
Why?
Oh.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What terrible Johnny jokes, but by contrast, we are incredibly excited to have our guest today. If you have laughed at any time in the last couple of decades, it's probably been at this guy on The Mindy Project, on Eastbound and Down, in movies like Neighbors and Blockers. He's currently in a hilarious show on HBO called The White House Plumbers. Ladies and friends, please welcome Mr. Ike Barinholtz. Ike, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you, friends. Thank you, all my friends and my fans.
Friends.
There you go.
Wow.
He knows the lingo. So, Ike, we were talking a little bit beforehand. You're from Chicago. You have this, Goldie and I are from the Boston area, and we don't really have Boston accents, but we can turn it on, you know, like that. And I noticed in a lot of your interviews, you have that gear for Chicago, like you go right into it.
For me, the easiest trigger is getting mad, especially like when I'm driving, you know, like now you can't, like you used to back in the day. Before all this cancel culture shit. But you used to be able to like roll down the window and be like, hey, fucking, what are you doing?
Yes.
Now you cannot. Now you have to like, windows are up and you can't even like look that mad. But like, yes. When I'm swearing like that, I'm like, you dumb motherfucker. It's fucking green. That's where it really comes
out. You snap right back into it.
Yeah.
And I noticed, so you're a Cubs fan, which yes. Instantly, in my, from what little I know of Chicago, and tell me if I'm wrong, Cubs fans are like the fancy people who have done well in their lives. And White Sox fans are like the you know, people
the just butchers.
Coming home. Yeah, coming home.
They're working at the back of the yards, meat plants. They come home and they watch a Sox and game. I think that is accurate in the sense that, you know, Wrigley Field is kind of more in like Lincoln Park-y, which is like back in the 80s for cancel culture.
Yeah,
you call these
yeah.
people yuppies.
Amen.
Can't say yuppies no more.
You can't?
Can't. Protect the class.
Yeah.
Please cut that, Goldie. Thank you.
It's ageist.
But I think that is the stereotype. I think it's pretty true. You know, Sox fans, I think, are a little more resentful of Cubs fans. I grew up, my dad leans a little more Sox, strangely. So I'm one of those guys who I love the Cubs, but I also really like the Sox.
Oh,
it's like you got your wife and your guma. You know what I mean? Italian.
Well, so that's interesting. So you don't hate Sox fans. You don't hate the White Sox.
Okay. No. I actually love this current White Sox team. My dream would be for the Cubs to play the White Sox in the World Series and like beat them in like, I don't know, five games, six games. They would win. The Cubs would win.
I did notice too. In a
so you're just too busy for it to go seven.
I got shit going on, man. I just like, what if I have a meeting or I'm shooting something at the time? I don't want to be stressed out. So it's just five or six games. Okay.
I noticed in a few of your interviews, when you do sort of snap into this Chicago guy impersonation, you mentioned one particular ball player a few times and it was really making me laugh. Do you remember who I'm talking about? Like the jersey you might own? You kept mentioning Paul Konerko.
Oh, Konerko. Oh, my God. The ultimate Chicago player. Oh,
they go so nuts for him there. Right?
Oh, my God. He hit like one of the greatest grand slams in the 2005. It was right around the time I met my wife, and she's actually a Sox fan. So right. I was playing up the Sox a lot more. I was like, oh, these guys, this is my life right here. This is my life. And Konerko was definitely one of my favorite players on that team. And it's just such a Konerko. It's all purpose. Like, where's your favorite pizza place? Oh, Konerko's. Beautiful. Where do you get your car fixed? Oh, Konerko's over on Dempster.
It does work for almost everything. And it's funny, the Chicago guys I know also have a weird, like, they'd have the Konerko jerseys, and it's like, we love this guy. You kidding me? Great. White guy He's with a name like this? Yeah.
A white guy of mostly Polish descent? Yeah. Finally, CA, representation matters.
Finally.
Oh, God. So you grew up in Chicago, and what kind of stuff when you were a kid were you laughing at? Like, what made you laugh as a kid?
Sometimes when the pastor would have a, you know, particularly funny quote in that week's Bible study.
You're right, of course.
God bless my parents for having, I think, good senses of humor, because it was all like early SNL and Mel Brooks and Steve Martin and, you know, they let us watch everything. Eddie Murphy, Trading Places is probably the movie that's been seen the most in our house growing up.
Awesome.
That's so great. And was that VHS or beta?
We were a VHS family. Yeah. Goddamn proud of it. We still are. My parents still pop in a cassette, and you know, they never signed up for any of the streamers or anything. But no, we were. I think a comedy forward house.
Yeah.
And you know, my parents, I remember they would go out at night and come back and be like, "We just went to Second City. Oh, we saw this guy named Richard Kind. He was so funny." Oh, like it was awesome. Just like they loved comedy. They still do.
And, that's
and
great.
So they're just they gave that to us.
That's awesome.
I'm sure you've had occasion to probably run into Richard Kind and tell him about that in your travels. Have you met him or worked with him?
I can say I am now friends with Richard Kind.
Yes. Oh, that's
awesome. Just call me George Clooney because I'm friends with Richard Kind.
There you go. It doesn't matter. Equally successful, sure.
I've met him a a few times throughout the years. And then he was, we did History of the World Part Two, and we brought him in for a bunch of stuff. And he is just the funniest guy. And I told him that, and he was like, don't tell me that. It makes me feel too old that your father saw me when you were a boy.
Oh, that's an excellent kind.
Thank you.
Who has a kind in their bag? You have Richard Kind in your bag.
I do. Richard Kind.
You're doing the mouth. You're doing the mouth right.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I do Richard Kind. I do Richard Klein. I do Richard Dry. Only Richards.
Whoa.
Yes.
Only Richards.
It's the name of my Netflix special. Only Richards. Mike Barinholtz. Only Richards.
Oh, when you get down to Richard Widmark, then we know that you're committed to the bit.
The kind feels like it's like just left of the Leno.
Hold on, actually, Jay Leno just walked into my house and bringing me donuts for the strike. Look at this.
Holy Grail.
Oh, like a man of the people.
What a great guy. Just pulled up in a fucking 1928 Duesenberg, shooting fucking diesel fuel all over my goddamn neighborhood. Thanks, Jay.
He never touches any of the Tonight Show money that he took from Conan, ever. He doesn't touch any of that. That's in a separate space.
I will say the one time I saw him in one of those stupid cars, like I was out by Griffith Park and I was on a bike ride, and literally before I knew it, I was like waving at him and I was like, hey, and I was like, what the fuck am I doing? Like 1 second later, but there is something you go, oh, that's Jay Leno and he's in like a Duesenberg.
Yeah.
And you get like a part of your brain, the lizard part gets excited. It's like famous person in an open old car. And I was like, I waved at him like a moron.
I do that all the time with famous Los Angelinos. Like I would, when I used to see Angeline, I'd like come up next to me, hey! Like, I don't know what she's getting out of it, but I guess she wants me to. Otherwise, she would just drive like a Toyota Tercel.
Exactly.
Drive a pink Corvette.
Yeah, I think she's kind of looking for that.
She's looking for a little attention.
So now you grew up there. You laughed a lot in your house growing up, which is awesome. I love hearing about Eddie Murphy in any household. I'm like, oh, okay, your parents were cool.
They were cool. If
they can hear Eddie Murphy going on in the background, they're fine.
Weren't hiding it inside a sock like I was.
Well, my mom's from her family's from like South Central Ohio, real red cities. In the red part of the country, and we would go there a lot for like summers and stuff, and I would bring some of the tapes, and I remember I said to my cousins, I was like, you guys want to watch Trading Places? And my aunt, who was incredibly like she thought like Annie was problematic,
right?
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? No.
And she's like, duh, Miss Hannigan with her garter belts. She walks into the scene where Jamie Lee Curtis like takes her dress off and gets in bed with Dan Aykroyd.
Yep, remember.
And
it well.
She went like, I remember she just walked through and went, like she was being burned with flames or something.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah. I love that you were the purveyor across state lines of that smut.
Yeah, well, I went to jail for 2 years for it.
Yeah.
Pretty serious down there.
It sounds like your version of Footloose, where you're sent off into the country and you bring Trading Places. Teach the kids to laugh.
Everyone, jack off!
Oh, Dick Loose. That's got to be something.
Dick Loose!
Dick Loose!
That can be folded into the Richards.
Yeah. Dick.
Time permitting, Dick Loose. All right. Well, so we're working on that together. Good thing we have the same agent.
That was created on the pod. I know the deal. I know the deal.
But we're locked in with Matt Rice. We've never done
Hey, man. He will make it happen. No joke.
Oh, from whatever's left of the Grateful Dead, he'll make it happen on his phone.
No man has closed more deals while listening to Sugar Magnolia.
Oh, God. We love you, Matt.
We love you, baby.
We know you're listening today, at least.
Yes.
So another thing I noticed in a lot of these interviews you've done is your Obama impression is insane. And I saw you on Jennifer Hudson's show. I wasn't aware she had a show. She really put you through your paces with that Obama impersonation. She's like, now do him in a mall. Now do him taking off in an airplane. And it was like just...
that slow, stilted of a setup. But you were so game. You were so nice. And you're like, did it. Here he is in a mall, folks. I'm in a mall.
I'm such a big fan of hers that she is someone I will call and demand for. It was wonderful. I used to, believe it or not, play basketball with him. Really? Back in the late 90s, you know. There was this big kind of gym in Chicago, and friends and I used to go there, and they would have two full basketball courts, and like at least two or three times a day they would run 5-on-5 for hours.
Wow.
And we would just go and see this guy, and he was like a state senator or something, you know, whatever he was back then, but
right,
it was really nice. But my writing partner, Dave Stassen, one day Obama like went up, and Dave like followed him, and Obama was really pissed, and he like pointed his finger in Dave's face and was like, don't fucking undercut me, kid. Hey, look at me. Don't fucking do that shit. So like whenever you would see him throughout the years, like giving an amazing speech that was like so eloquent, and like, you just always think of him being like, hey, motherfucker, try that shit again. Try that fucking shit again, bitch.
That's great.
Oh my God.
I know, that's so funny. You have a locked in story about the future president of the United States.
It's great. Pretty good. And I have that for several more. I had Donald Trump Jr. is a dear friend of mine.
Yeah,
and
good.
God willing, in 2032, we're gonna have some fucking fun for once.
Oh, he listens. He's a fan. We love him. Hey, Donnie Jr.
He's a fan.
Yeah, we've got. I would watch a documentary about someone who just wanted to hard foul important people.
That's a great idea.
We'd call it clothesline.
Like a prank movie where you just. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. You have to get. They all have to be like basketball fans on some level. You have to get them to play the pickup game.
Oh,
that's going to be the hard part. Hey, man, can you do me a favor? We're having a pickup game. Can you just watch my plays for 1 second?
We're one short.
And then it's like Eric Andre walks up and they're like, what's going on?
Oh, God. But yeah, so Obama must make Chicago people feel pretty awesome.
They like,
that
love
one, yeah, that was a great thing for that city. So, okay. We're going loosely chronologically here.
You guys hold on Massachusetts, so you guys have had some great John Quincy Adams.
The best.
We were already out of ideas after John Adams, and then we were like, and John Quincy Adams? Is that
exactly
what? Anything?
I think it was actually John Adams pretending to be someone else. Yes. I'm not John Adams. I'm John Quincy Adams.
I am his long lost cousin.
Totally.
Yes, I'm 104. So what of it?
Did you throw in JFK as an afterthought? Was that?
Yeah,
a
I did. I remember. Yeah. He's okay. Maybe the more famous one.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Oh, and don't sleep on the Duke, Michael Dukakis. Oh, he almost had it, didn't we?
He almost got in there. He almost got in there.
It's a little before your time.
Should never have gotten in that tank. No, I remember Dukakis.
Oh, good call with the tank.
I remember the tank. He got in that tank and he put the helmet on. It was all over after that.
Good memory.
Do you, when you do these impressions, like, do they just come to you or do you like labor on them?
Oh, God, no. I don't labor over anything.
We're kindred spirits.
It's kind of a problem. No, it's more.
So you just have an ear? Like, is it a musical thing? I noticed a guitar in the back. Is it, do you have like a pitch for voices?
You guys
voices
want to bust it out? You guys want to.
Yes.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't even play it. Like, it's my old guitar that when I quit in like 12, when I was 12, my mom's like, do you want this? I was like, yeah.
It's a classical, it's more, too. It's not
well,
even
yeah,
a steel
I mean,
string.
Yeah. Like the best guitar players, some say Hendrix, some say, you know, Townsend. It's Andres Segovia.
Oh, wow. Good name drop.
I think, though, it's just more like hearing it and just doing it. And the reality is a lot of the times I do an impression, it doesn't work. But it's just kind of in the moment, kind of trying to ape what they sound like a little bit. And a lot of times I'll do one at home and one of my daughters will be like, who is that supposed to be? Like, that's Bob Costas. That's what he is. She's like, no, it didn't sound like him. Unless you're your fucking Bob Costas.
It's funny you say Bob Costas, because when I was a page at SNL and Daryl Hammond was there and he was trying to do a Bob Costas and he had an old tape Walkman. And he was sitting and listening by the page desk to Bob Costas and trying to do the voice. And he's like, there's nothing to grab onto. There's nothing to grab onto.
Now, talk about labor. That's a guy that does the work. Like, yeah. Didn't he do the thing where he was like, I like to listen to, I don't listen to the person. I listen to someone I think they sound like. Like, that was his, like, that's like crazy. That's so cool.
Next level. That's next level. His impersonations were, I remember when Goldie, the year we were there and that crew came in, his cast, Daryl Hammond and the new cast, Will Ferrell. And Daryl Hammond's audition tape had this thing that was just him doing Phil Donahue, who was already out of the spotlight at that time. But his Donahue was unbelievable. You could hear gasps in the audience.
I was thinking lately about his, do you remember his Geraldo Rivera? Do you remember that one? God, he did that a few times. It was so good.
A good impression of that.
Yeah. So you put the least effort into it possible, which is great. That's the way impressions should be. I'm a full fan of least effort possible.
Yeah, listen, if you are a proper impressionist, you do work because you're going to do like three shows in Vegas, you know?
Yeah.
But if you're me and it's just for like a casual lunch with a friend, or you know what I mean? Like, you don't,
casual lunch with a friend. Yeah, the stakes are a little lower in that scenario.
Yeah, what, are they going to leave the lunch? All right, fine. What am I going to go back home? Cool.
So, okay, you're growing up in Chicago. When do you start, like, performing and realizing that that's something that you wanted to do?
It was, you know, I was very drawn to politics when I was in Chicago. I just thought it looked fun and also like, you could help people. and then I went to Boston University.
Yeah,
oh, wow.
Terriers. Go Terriers.
Fucking Zaslav. 610 Beacon Street, fucking Miles Standish Hall.
Get out of town, Zaslav.
Fuck off, say. Hey, pay your fucking writers. I like to think that.
Why do they care? That's what it was great, but you go like, why do you care what we get paid? Because you think you're all going to be screenwriters?
Don't turn on them, Goldie.
It was in Boston. I just imagined like a bunch of like old Boston guys, like Teamsters. You know what? Pay you fucking righties, you cocksucker. It's all like, it's not. It's kids from like Nyack or like you know, in San Francisco. But yeah, I went to BU and then I wasn't doing well. I wasn't like liking the classes, but I was really just like nonstop watching movies and shows and tapes of SNL, and like Mr. Show had just come out and I was obsessed with that. Mr. Show. Love Mr. Show. And so I kind of knew that it was college and politics was not going to happen. So I came back home and I went to go see an improv show at you guys remember the Improv Olympic?
Yeah.
Which is actually back. Yeah. It closed, but now it's back. It was a big Chicago improv theater. And they had their, I think, 10th anniversary. And I went to go see that show with my dad. And it was like the eye-opening event of my life because I was like, oh, God, I love this. And I think I can do it. And it, like Amy Poehler and McKay and Chris Farley had shot a thing and sent it in. The person who made me laugh the hardest that night was Tim Meadows.
Oh,
it's like he's just so funny, and he just had these lines that were just, it was like, oh, that's the kind of shit that I say when I'm by myself. And I signed up for classes like the next day. And, you know, you take classes for a couple months, and then if you're not like unbearably bad, they'll put you in a small group, and then you start performing, and then if you're not too bad, then you can get put with better groups and stuff. But it was very fun. It was a very fun time to be performing. Chicago in the late 90s was just like,
and that was before like everyone was doing, like, I feel like improv classes got so commoditized, you know.
Yes.
And this was, you would almost have to seek it out in a way that you don't have to do today.
Well, yeah, you know what it was it was this time where it was right before, it was really SNL, I think. Like SNL had a huge, like basically when they hired Tina, I think, like, and like Will, that generation you're talking about, those people were all Groundlings or Second City people, I feel like, or UCB. Yeah. And so I think in that early 90s or mid 90s to late 90s, it was more like once those people started achieving success, like the people I came up with were like Jack McBrayer and like, you know, Seth Meyers and stuff. And I think once that generation started kind of finding success, people were like, oh my God, this is a pipeline to it. And it was. So it was definitely a fun time.
Audiences must have gone apeshit for Jack McBrayer.
The probably the audience's favorite person ever.
I know.
I mean, Rachel Dratch was like, she would fucking destroy. Like, they always did that thing at the end of Second City shows where like cast members would kind of come out one at a time.
Yeah.
And you,
yeah,
which is just like basically like, hey, you guys mind if we do an applause meter after every show? and Dratch just like fucking destroyed. Oh, but Jack McBrayer, in terms of just like, and he wouldn't even say things sometimes. You just like walk into a scene with a look on his face and yeah, fucking crowd it. Of like drunken Chicago frat boys were like, this guy's amazing.
Do you think like anyone will ever capture the magic of that in a more commercial way for TV or film or something? Because it's like people use it, like Larry David uses improv or whatever, but I feel like no one's captured the, hey, turn in your TV at 8:30 and we're going to be doing this live show, because I've seen magical improv shows like that.
Yeah, you know, part of me wonders if it's just too live of a medium, you know? When you see it happening in the moment and there's like just, I don't know, being there and seeing how there's sometimes 0 seconds pass between someone saying something and another person like figuring it out. Like,
yeah.
I don't know,
yeah.
But I think it could work. You would just need a really good group and, you know, good camera crew to kind of move it around. Now there's Who's Line, which is, that's more like short form. That's kind
games
of like
games and stuff. Yeah.
I did like Who's Line Is It Anyway, though.
Yeah. Those guys are like incredible. Like, yeah. They're like incredibly funny guys.
My dad always points out, my dad lives in Bellingham, Washington. Every time I go up there, he's like, you know, Ryan Stiles lives here. I'm like, yes, Dad, I remember that. I remember
he's
that.
He's just crowbarring in like Who's Line cast members. Oh, Alec, you're going to Canada. I believe Colin Mockery is from Canada. You could say hi to him.
The other story of Bellingham, Washington is that Hilary Swank grew up there. And apparently vowed she would never return and has now since returned. So my dad loves telling that entire story. Like, she said she'd never be back, but here she is.
I don't know that I've ever heard lower stakes than I won't come back to Bellingham ever.
And
I just like him.
Act two is over.
Just like him tracking every time she's mentioned it. Yeah. Then at the press conference for the core, he said, I grew up in a small town, I'll never return to.
What a good pull on the core. Oh my God. An Aaron Eckhart Hillary Swank vehicle, I believe.
Yes. The only one, sadly.
So, right. They were the Hope Crosby.
Shipping them for years.
So, when you're writing for, I mean, you don't write for improv, but like you have to have some idea of like, I'm good at this character. You have to kind of write for yourself in a way.
Yeah.
So how did you do that then? And I guess, how do you do it now?
I mean, I think it took me a time, you know, to figure out kind of who I am as a like comedic persona. You know what I mean? Like, I remember like when I first started doing improv, like every time I'd go out there, the character was always just like an angry guy. Oh, what the fuck are you doing? You know what I mean? And like, you can get laughs like that, but then you also ruin scenes like that. You know, I remember there was one point, there was a guy named Mick Napier who ran, owned and operated this theater called The Annoyance that's still there. And I remember him being like, basically saying the long version, very short, is just like, loosen the fuck up. Like, don't be afraid to look like a fucking pussy. You know what I mean? Yeah, like,
right.
Like, I remember like around that time, him and this guy, Craig Kukowski, just very good advice. And I started kind of opening up a little bit more. And I think once you do kind of figure out like, what are your strengths? You know what I mean? Like, I am good at playing kind of like a confident dumbass. You know what I mean? Who's a little bit of a scumbag. So once you kind of know that I always play versions of that character, I think, whatever the stakes are, whatever the scene is about. But I think it takes time, right? It takes time for people to figure out, like, how can you score? Like, what do you know you can do? Because there's some people who are, like, fucking, like, just, like, chameleons where they're just always changing and you're just like, gee, I don't know how you do that. Right. I can't do that.
Yes.
So I think once you know yourself, I think it helps.
In Eastbound and Down, where's that a character they came to you with, or was that something that you developed? And that seemed to be a lot of improv. I mean, it felt, by that, I mean, it felt like
real and natural and in the moment and not super written. Is that the case?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was, they obviously, Danny and John wrote great stuff, but very, very, there's a lot of times in my life where I'm just very thankful that I did so much improv, because it helps you on set. It helps you getting the part. It helps you writing, I think. And I loved that show very, very much. I was obsessed with Danny.
Amazing. Same. And that was the first time, I got to say, because I'm not like super aware of actors. I don't, I should be, but I'm not. But that was the first time where I saw you and I was like, I got to go look up who that is, because that was hilarious. Cool. And then I was like, now I know that guy. Like that was the thing that for me made me aware of who you were, where it was like, who the fuck is that? That's hilarious.
A lot of people are like, still are like, I thought you were Russian. I was like, thank you. I love that show. They called and they were like, hey, there's a part of the catcher, right? Which was the part that Sudeikis ended up playing. And I was like, this is fucking crazy. Like, I wasn't even getting like auditions for shitty things at that point. Like, I was like not getting called in a lot. But Allison Jones, who's like the best casting director, comedy casting director, said, you know, you should see this guy. And I remember, like, I was about to leave for the audition and my agent's assistant called and was like, hey, they're out to someone and it's gonna happen, so don't go. And I was like crestfallen, you know. And then I called my agent. I was like, please, is there any other part, anything that they have? And he's like, oh, they have another guy, but they're looking for like a Russian guy. It's like, I can do a Russian accent. I'll do a Russian accent. Just get me in.
That's awesome.
And so I went in and there were like dudes that looked like they were like, I don't know, about to get fucking murked by John Wick in the waiting room, you know, just like giant Balkan men. And I walked in and Danny was in the audition room with Jody. And we started kind of doing the scene, but like right away, kind of started just going at each other and riffing, and like me making fun of him and him just being like, what the fuck are you talking about? I can't understand what you're fucking saying, dog. And it just in the room, it was very like, you could tell it was fun. And I walked out of there being like, that would be great if I got that shit.
Yeah.
I got to learn to throw.
Oh my God, dude, Goldie, fuck, dude. I was so determined. I was more worried about like not looking like an idiot in front of like 200 extras in Wilmington than I was like other shit. I was very nervous about that, but yeah, it was fun. So yeah, again, the improv I think helped me out a lot. And then when we got to shoot the show, it was so much fucking improv. They just go to crazy places and it's like the riff zone. You're officially entering the riff zone.
Oh, cool.
Do I need to know somebody to get in there? I'll come with Goldie and see if they let us in.
They're not letting a bald guy in. Oh, two guys.
Yeah, we better bring some chicks. One of them is bald. JC, you better come with us. Be the.
We'll all go together. You'll be my plus threes. It's,
yeah.
That's all we wanted.
Thank you.
Well, you mentioned something in that answer about you were saying you were not getting called in for things. And now explain this to people, because even, you know, I work in this business of show, as we call it,
in the town.
And still, I feel like you're someone who I have just seen constantly for the last almost 20 years.
And offer only, can't get, I've looked, couldn't get you in, because I didn't have an offer.
Well, you guys made me an offer for this podcast, which is why I'm here.
There we go.
And I would love to discuss payment at some point.
Yeah, so would we.
Do you guys have Venmo?
Talk to my agent about that.
We have Ben Less.
Ben Less.
Yes. Wow. Ah, fuck. I just saw the light for a second. That was beautiful. Ben Less. I don't have Venmo. I have Ben Less.
Oh, beautiful. Home run. Touch
God
them all.
Damn it.
Goalie.
Touch them all, baby.
Touch them
you
all.
You just fucking Canerco'd, brother.
Oh, just Canerco was a fucking hero
that
again.
That was incredible.
He put this city on his back. But you said that you weren't going in for things, but I was seeing you all the time and stuff. So what does that mean for you not getting called in? You weren't getting called in for the things that you really wanted?
No. I mean, I was out here for like just under 2 years, and then I got on Mad TV. And then I was on Mad TV for 5 years, and then I was off Mad TV. And in those like 3.5 years between Mad TV and Eastbound and Down, I was barely doing stuff. I did a couple movies that were maybe win the Oscar. Let's just put it that way.
I love that answer.
And I was really existing kind of as a writer at that point because I just, no one would hire me. Like I was
I'm
just
so sorry.
Yeah, it was horrible. I looked like shit. I should have fucking stayed acting. I can't stop eating Cheez-Its.
Am I ugly or something? What's happening?
But it was, it saved my life. It really did. Because most of the stuff that I was going out for when I would get called in was bad. You know, it was like very bad WB sitcoms. You know what I mean?
It seems like you would be called in. There was this era, and it's hard to articulate, but it felt like every sitcom, bad sitcom, had a character called like the Dews. And it was like you, me, and Dupree had somehow influenced stuff to the point where like we need this guy who comes in who's like, you know, he's failed to launch and he's just, and it seems like you would be, I could see you getting
here's a reality with the Dews is that pre-2008, the Dews was like a hot guy. Then President Barack Obama signed into law the ugly character actor comedy bill of we're going to have some freaky looking guys that are going to be in your perverted best friend. And honestly, though, like I would lose parts to guys who were like fucking so hot. Like, you know, I walk in the waiting room and be like, oh my God, these guys are all fucking like hot models. And then they started letting in the freaks. But so for those that period, it was very tough. I just wasn't getting any looks, and I was just, my partner Dave Stassen and I were like, all right, we're just gonna write, and we were trying to write anything, literally any. It did not matter how shitty it was. We would be like, we'll write it. But when you're starting out, and you have not really sold anything yet, like, oh my God, sometimes we'll go back through our old emails from like 2000 and like. Seven and just send them to each other, and like one of them was so funny. It was to our manager. It was like, is the Scott Adams Dilbert meeting going to happen or not? like he keeps pushing it, and we like it was just like, you know, like so fucking bad.
So much invested in that.
Oh my God.
That's hilarious. All right, so that you've explained it well, what you're talking about when you're saying you weren't getting called in, because now it feels like you have a much different situation going on where, you know, you're now up on the Billboard, name checked, here you are, you're here to watch an Ike Barinholtz project. What I mean, has that been an interesting change for you?
Well, that's going to all change because I'm aging out, which is why I'm starting a pretty extensive plastic surgery procedure. It'll be, just let's just say the strike is coming at a good time.
Right.
When that deal is signed, you guys are going to see me and look like fucking Michael Cimino. No, it's nice. It's wonderful. It's you know, to be able to, you know, if you're able to work in things that you actually like in this business, that is like, you've won the lotto.
Yeah.
So, you know, to get to do, you know, a show, get a call, you know, hey, you want to do a White House Plumbers? Like, I'm like obsessed with American history and Watergate. And
I'm excited to talk about this.
Yeah.
I'm so enjoying this. And you say that you're into American history, and I myself am fascinated with the Watergate era, especially. Awesome. So it's interesting because... And tell me if I'm way off base on this. I feel like HBO kind of fumbled the ball a little bit in terms of promoting this show, because this is something that I just didn't see that much advertising for this.
HBO. Oh, you mean Max?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Max.
Sorry. That's how old I am.
I mean, I thought those kids also were chanting, publicize your shows. Publicize your shows. We care about this, too. We
ads on Max. YouTube. Ads on YouTube.
Yes. When do we want them? Now.
I once in a meeting suggested that Fox promote my show before Pornhub clips, and that was really like not received well.
Listen, part of me is like, it's brilliant, but there's also another part of me that's like, some guy just like, so he just needs to jack off. He's like, fucking show. We're going to watch this fucking show.
They literally asked me, how do you think we could reach young men? And I was like, well, you know, when you watch pornographic videos, there's these clips before.
They're embedded.
And every guy in America will see this. But anyway.
Hey, man, sorry. I know you're about to board your flight with your kids. I just want you to know. young wife fucks friends. I was watching your preview came up, and it was fucking fantastic, man. It's a great job on the show. Nice to meet you. Is this your family? Is this your family? Well, congratulations, guys.
God.
How'd you learn about the show?
Another satisfied customer. So White House plumbers. I went into this, and I eat up everything about Watergate, but I sort of expect, I didn't know it was a comedy, which is why I was saying I wasn't sure it was publicized that well, because I was like, ooh, this is going to be intriguing. I'm excited to watch. And then a few minutes in, obviously, I'm like, oh, this is, they're playing this for laughs. And it was fucking hysterical. Like, so did you see the script of this and were just like, I want to be part of this?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I it was one of those where it's like just hearing who's involved, and I was like, yeah, unless the script is bad, I'm gonna do it. Like, mm-hmm. I've known Pete Hike and Alex Gregory for a long time, great writers. Dave Mandel is like, you know, kind of a legend, and then it was just knowing it was Woody and Thoreau. I've worked with Woody before. He's just so much fun. He's so fucking funny. And Thoreau is a guy I've always been a big fan of, but I never really worked with him. He is out of control on this fucking show.
Like, yes. His mustache is real.
That mustache is real.
Oh, like, my God.
It's getting oiled and brushed on set. It's like, yeah, I love his take. His take on Lydia is he's a hot guy.
but his, he can't, like, help that.
His fucking performance on this is just,
it's crazy. It's
out. They're both amazing, but like, Thoreau is just out of control, man.
I agree with you.
Fucking thing he does. Like the scene when he's like pitching me and John Mitchell and John Dean on all the projects. Like in that room that day, it was, first of all, it took like 13 hours to shoot most of that scene.
Yeah.
In a 90 degree room. It's one of those old buildings on the East Coast that they do not have air conditioning and they're trying to pump it in, but it's just like all the sweat is real. Like everyone was just like pouring I could wring my shirt out.
Oh my God.
I couldn't stop watching him. He was just fucking incredible.
Yeah. He was great.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. I think they wanted, you know, people to laugh, but also wanted, because a lot of the family stuff is kind of, you know, serious. And so I think they do want to have a balance, but it is, to me, just so funny and enjoyable. And it's just like, if it is, we've seen the story so many fucking times.
Yes.
But we've never really seen it as like a comedy. Like Dick, I like the movie Dick a lot, which is really great with Dan Hedaya and Kirsten Dunst. But
there's the headline for our podcast. Ike Barinholtz loves Dick. Okay. Keep going. We got it.
Ike Barinholtz likes Dan Hedaya's dick.
Oh, there we go.
Straight face.
Even better. Good rewrite.
But these guys just, I thought, did such a great job, and it's so funny. And I'm excited for people to watch it, but you can only watch it on Max.
Oh, God. So how are they? How many? There's four out now, right?
So maybe there's four. Maybe there's two or four more.
Okay, so there's like eight.
Yeah.
Six or eight.
It seems like Dave Mandel has this thing now with Veep and that it's, I wonder, like, could you do Iran-Contra next or something? Like, get the same cast.
It's so funny. That was my first thing I said. I was like, hey, guys, Oliver North, we have the same gap in our teeth. but I think luckily this country has done so many shitty, stupid things that there's just, you could fucking have a field day.
But with the same cast, I'm saying, like, do another season with
Oh, with the repertoire thing,
right? Hey, that's what I'm saying.
Awesome. Oh my God!
Everything was so. I'm enjoying it so much. See,
Paul Giamatti is Casper Weinberger.
Oh, love it!
I am Casper Weinberger.
Oh, when I see this gang of actors sink their teeth into the Teapot Dome scandal, 12 parts. But I was laughing so hard in the first episode because, again, it took me a minute to lock into the tone because I'm like a Watergate purist. Like, okay, I want the facts and, oh, isn't that shocking? But so it's comedic. And there was one scene where Lena Headey is Woody Harrelson's wife and Mrs. Hunt. They go out to dinner with the Liddies at the Liddies' house. And Lena Headey thinks, okay, this might be my grand reintroduction into Washington society because the Hunts have sort of been left behind and like, oh, we're getting invited back in. And in the middle of the thing, like G. Gordon Liddy's playing Hitler speeches on the, and like you just see Lena Headey's face, like this is not the return I anticipated.
Biggest
like,
fucking loser. Like
so great.
Like, yeah, it is crazy, and all like everything in it is true. You know what I mean? They really
wait.
Did
that,
their...
crazy. That's what I was wondering. Is that like that happened?
Yeah, man. Wow.
And the eggs hitting when he went out the back porch to chase the kids, I was like dying in my bed.
Dude, there was also some things like reading it. There's things that you just miss in a script sometimes, like, and then you're not there for the shooting of a specific scene. But then when you see it, when he has those like gait adjustment shoes that make him walk fucking weird, I was like crying. I was like, this is so stupid.
I know, that was great.
Oh man, so G. Gordon Liddy. I remember like he had a radio show for years, and I remember people used to call in from the Howard Stern show, and like he was doing a broadcast from Israel, and it's like, I'm G. Gordon Liddy, I'm here in Gush Katif, Israel, and we're gonna take a call. Who's this? And it was like Crackhead Bob from the Howard Stern show. Like, yeah. David Bob, and he's like, Bob, I'm having a hard time understanding you.
That's the thing with these Watergate guys is like everybody ultimately wrote a book or was on a radio show for years and years. So they do have this collection of facts that are, when stitched together, make incredible comedy. Like I learned a lot from watching White House Plumbers. Like I did not know that it took them 8 attempts to get into Watergate. Like I just thought like, okay, they broke in, they got caught. They went in, they got caught. It was so many times.
The reticence also, to shatter a window.
I know.
Also true, crazy. Like the guys like Yul and Tony, all the Cubans, like in All the President's Men, like you just kind of see them in like the lineup in court really.
Yeah.
One of them's like, Uncle Junior.
One of them is Uncle Junior, yeah. He's Muscolito, I think.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
But when you see these guys in person and you realize that they're the dumbest fucking guys. The guys, they're like rich Cuban guys who like fucked up the Bay of Pigs and are like still mad about it. And they're just like, oh, this is gonna be our chance. Like it's just like they're from top to bottom dumb.
Right, doing it for free. Like that's also stupid.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's a celebration of idiots, you know. And the White House guys were dumb too, like, you know what I mean? Like Jeb McGruder is a fucking shithead. He was like a country club pussy and like went to jail over this shit, and then finds God, and then kept like calling reporters and was like, you know, Nixon knew. And then like a month later recalled and be like, I never said that. It's just like a bunch of fucking
what a disaster.
Demons. I know.
It's funny seeing in the comments, because my dad was older. He was born in 1920 and he fought in World War II. And his rage over Nixon and Watergate, like when I was growing up, he would be like drinking and yelling about Nixon in like, you know, 1988, well after.
Whoa.
And then it's so peanuts compared to everything. Like,
yeah.
Trump, no. Every day was a Watergate.
Every day. And it's, first of all, God bless your fucking dad. That's awesome.
Yes.
But like, you could always tell, like, you're always like, part of me was like, I understood how scarred boomers were from Nixon.
From Kennedy to Nixon,
I always got it, but part of me is always like, all right, but it wasn't that bad. And then you have Trump, who every day like wakes up and he's like, I'm going to nuclear bomb Rosie O'Donnell today. And you're like, oh, fuck. Like the stress and the fucking whatever trauma you have of like having a very dangerous person in charge is a very real thing. So I get it.
Yeah, because when they started to redeem Nixon around the late 80s, I feel like they started looking at him as a statement. My dad would be like, goddamn, Richard Nixon's a warmonger! You know, and it's just like screaming at me. And it's like, I'm 16. I'm like, sure.
Do you want to hear the worst thing Richard Nixon did? Yes. You probably know this. Richard Nixon, when he was running for president in 68, Johnson was kind of like wanted to end Vietnam, and they were having, the White House was having very like severe negotiations with the North Vietnamese. And Nixon had Kissinger through this back channel intermediary, a woman, I can't remember her name. Anyways, Kissinger used this woman to talk to the Viet Cong and basically said to them, don't take this deal that Johnson is going to offer you because Nixon is going to win that election and we're going to give you a much, much better deal.
And then they didn't give it.
North Vietnamese said, okay, the deal never happened. Nixon won. The war goes on for like four more years. And then the deal that they ended up ending with was pretty much what LBJ had in 68. So just through like political greed and power, he killed like 800,000 Southeast Asians. Like it's like, it is truly like, he is your father's right, Goldie. Like he is right now, like Saddam Hussein is like sitting on his fucking face in hell.
Kind assessment, but I have to agree. There's an audio recording on some Nixon special that I watched that's of LBJ's phone call to Nixon to confront him about exactly what you're talking about. And of course, Nixon denies it. Oh, we would never, I would never direct it. You know, like he just totally denied it. But everybody said afterwards.
The Nixon Library, I haven't been there since high school, although it's pretty close by, but it's fascinating how, you know, it's just like, and here's Nixon's limo. Like, it's like, what can you really show?
There's nothing cool or sexy about this guy. He's such a fucking loser. When he first asked out his wife, Pat, you know, back in whenever, he was like, she was like, no, you're fucking dorky. And he was like, basically, she would go on dates and he would drive.
He would drive.
Yeah, fucking drive her. That's like
that's psychotic.
Hardcore, man. That's
I still do that for my wife. It's just courtesy.
Luckily, my wife's boyfriend is a great guy. We get along really well. We watch games together.
Oh my god! Yeah. So that era is hilarious, and this era we're living in now is terrifying. And so tell us how you're working on something, or it's probably done now, it's coming out soon, called Maximum Truth.
Yes.
And this is a mockumentary, I'm told, and it has a political angle. So tell us a little bit about that and where we can watch it.
It does. It does. It is a film that I co-wrote with my partner, Dave Stassen, who directed it. And Dave and I like love losers and we love like grifters. And we live in a truly like a golden age of grifters. Like everyone at this point, like late capitalism, people are just trying to get money any way they can. And politics is a very good way to get money. And then I will say, I'm not a both sides kind of guy, but both sides I think are just like, how many fucking emails do you get from candidates that are like, I've got bad news. Or like, I'm gonna be honest with you, we're fucked. You know what I mean? Like it's like they're just trying to get money.
Right.
And Dave and I are obsessed with those type of characters, and we kind of created these two characters who are basically amalgams of lots of different of these operators, and they're two guys who are paid to disrupt the congressional campaign of a young guy running for office here in LA. Basically, like a AOC is running for office in LA, and we're paid to kind of disrupt it. And there's these two guys. There's a guy named Jacob Wohl and a guy named Jack Berkman, who we definitely were inspired by in some elements, who constantly are out to rat fuck people. Like they are the children of the children of the White House plumbers. Yeah. Right. And just like in the movie Multiplicity, as each one gets dumber, worse. Like these guys are just so stupid. So this whole movie is just us trying to destroy someone's life and in the process just make our own shitty life so much worse. But it is like, I love like Christopher Guest movies. Like I love watching like just get the camera out and shoot. Yeah. And this guy, Dylan O'Brien, I don't know if you know him, he's this young actor and he plays my kind of cohort. And it is super fun. It's a perfect way to spend a Friday evening. You have a few beers, you have a joint or you're sober, you have some ice cream. And how can you watch it, you asked?
Yes, I did.
I think the best way, I just tell people, just go to wherever you can like rent or stream movies. I go to, can we even say this shit when there's a
of course
go to I just think you go to Apple and
yeah
and
we'll
buy
it.
If you go to people are going to be like, I think he said Quibi, but they bleeped it.
We can just call it Gojo from Succession. You just go to Gojo.
Gojo. But it will also be in some select theaters in probably, maybe 5 or 6 states.
So it's not out. Wait, it's not out yet.
It's not out yet. It's coming out in like 3 weeks or so. If you follow me on Instagram, I'll definitely show you how you can see this film.
Yes. Cool. Awesome. Well, we love Christopher Guest style anything.
Oh my
and
God.
Certainly
anything.
With political parody seems like it's an area they didn't really cover. So that's awesome, you know, because you don't want to do like, here's our dog show take. It's like,
we were going to do Best in Place. But here's the deal. Hold on. It was Cats. It was a cat show.
Oh,
so it was
totally different
idea.
Apples and oranges.
But Christopher Guest and I guess have the same lawyer who told me in no uncertain terms that if I proceed in this project, he will drop me as a client. Can I have that?
There's other lawyers. He's a shit.
Not like Jared Levine, baby.
Well, at least you don't share agents. You won't have to do his podcast, which you probably gladly do. Ike, you've been more than generous with your time.
Gosh. And hilarious.
We appreciate that. I know that you are a busy man.
And not these
not
days.
Pick up more of it. All right. Yeah, because strike.
Yeah, I'm just going to go walk around in a semicircle for 3 hours now.
Let me just say, he's been out there. So
I've been out there.
You're talking to me, right?
Nope.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking about.
He's picketing in Cape Cod. He's walking around a little lobster roll place.
Yeah. There is a place called the Falmouth Production Company near here.
Shut it down, Alex.
It's got like a broken shell driveway. I'm like, this isn't. I don't know that this is one of the
stand
big
out there
boys.
And scream at them. They're like, no, we did all we did exteriors for Wings here. That's it. Look at 1993. Leave me alone. I live here now. I'm an old man.
We do Haber shots for Deadliest Catch. That's it. That's all we're doing. Haber B roll. Well, Ike, thank you so much for being here today. You are so funny. We love watching you in everything.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So continue to watch White House Plumbers on
so
Max.
Good.
And look out for Maximum Truth next month in select theaters and then coming to a streaming service near you.
Maybe it'll be Max.
Max.
Max Truth.
Max on Max.
Thanks, Ike.
Thank you guys
so much.
Pleasure.
Okay. Wow. Oh, God. That was so fun with Ike.
Yeah.
Oh,
he's hilarious.
He was awesome. But now let's get to a portion of the show we like to call Top 5.
Top 5.
Oh, we sound good this week, particularly good. And the topic this week, I believe it was mine, top 5 movie titles.
Yes.
Top 5 movie titles of all time. I'll get us started. Number 5, 12 Angry Men.
Oh.
I think it's a great title. It really
probably
sets up exactly
you.
What you're in for. Number 4, A Clockwork Orange.
Ooh, yeah.
I think as a kid, and first seeing the movie, it just seemed like, oh, that's a cool nonsensical title. But it does mean something. In like English, British vernacular, it means something that two things that don't make sense together. It's like
haven't
an orange.
Cut it.
What cut what?
Haven't cut it.
You haven't seen that? You wouldn't like it. Don't watch it. You'll hate it. And it'll bother me.
Oh, interesting.
Number 3.
I've seen it many times.
Me too. Love it. Number 3, Vocal Glenn. Live and Let Die. I think Live and Let Die is a great title.
Yeah.
A little switcheroo. It's sort of United We Fall of movie titles. Live and Let Die. Live and Let Die? Goldie's
your
number
quiet. Two.
Number
Goldie's
two.
So impressed.
Back to the Future.
Oh, that's
I think
a
Back
good
to
one.
The Future's great title. Number 1, Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo. A title that will never leave me.
That's pretty good. So I think I'm second now.
Yeah.
Number 5, Sex, Lies, and Videotape.
Yeah, that's a good one. I considered it.
Yes.
It's a good one.
Yeah. Number 4, Howard the Duck.
Oh, yeah.
I want to know what that is.
Yep, a lot of people did.
I'm curious. It's a duck and his name's Howard. That's weird. By the same token, Number 3, Napoleon Dynamite. Ooh. What is who, what is that?
I know, and how did it become such a big movie?
It sounds cool. I want to know.
It's a good title, for sure.
Number two, Wedding Crashers.
Yes.
Tells you what it is.
A concept you didn't ever think about. You heard it, you knew what it was, and you wanted to see it executed.
Yep. Yes.
Number one, best movie title of all time, Psycho.
Yes. Oh, wow. This is really good.
You said
good.
That very well.
Psycho.
Well delivered.
Okay. My top five movie titles, starting with number five, Eyes Wide Shut.
Good one.
Yes. Another.
That's like United We Fall, though. Come
yes,
on, man.
It's true. It's true.
Yeah. Live and Let Die, United We Fall, Eyes Wide Shut.
It's still. Makes me every time it's there's I'm going to a place it's like a speakeasy or a cool place I do want to lean in and whisper Fidelio.
Exactly.
Fidelio. Also, why was Tom Cruise so shocked to just see people having sex? Like when you look back on it, it was presented as like the most shocking revelations, right. And then you walk in, it's like, oh my god, they're having sex in the missionary position. It's like. What the fuck are you so uptight about? It's not a big deal.
It's a Family Guy cutaway for sure.
That's great.
Number four, The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
I love that name. I think it just sounds so cool. Number three, Requiem for a Dream. Like, I was always like, it just sounds like a classical piece. Maybe it is
yeah.
a classical
oh,
piece. I don't
that
know,
boy, that was a tough one.
Dark.
Ass to
ass.
Ass to ass. I feel like in the remake, maybe I could get that part. Ass to ass.
Number two, There Will Be Blood.
Yes.
Yes.
Great title.
And my number one is Cool Hand Luke.
Really
one.
Great.
Yeah.
Great titles, great movies.
Like
and
the
JC,
topic.
What do we have next week?
Next week's topic, I don't know how you'll feel about it, but it is top five things that make you cry.
All right. Goldie should have an easy week.
I was just hoping you were going to say things that make you go,
Oh, that's a good one, though.
That's
doorbell
pretty
rang.
Good.
Who could it be?
Things that
girl's
make
best
you
friend
go,
to pay me. And
What do you want for dinner? All right. That'll be fun. So we're doing cry.
Cry, yeah.
Cry, cry, cry.
Cry.
Excellent. All right. I'm excited for that next week. And I'm even more excited for the end of our show. With High Note. Oh, Tom and Max. I swear it's getting longer. I'll go quickly. I talked about this another week, but American Idol finished, and your next American Idol is Iam Tongi. He's awesome. Okay.
He was great in that. I haven't seen the entire season. I just saw the auditions, and he seemed great.
Oh, cool.
He was awesome.
What's
and Levy loved him. He's from Hawaii. He has that sort of laid back ukulele style, but he can sing anything and make it sound terrific. We loved him in our house. Levy went batshit crazy when he won. So that was exciting.
That's sweet. I remember there was like an early season, there was a Hawaiian woman or girl that was a participant, and she got so many votes because I feel like Hawaiians really, really support people from Hawaii. So that's pretty cool that someone won it from Hawaii.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Right.
He totally won. He was great.
Want to go, Goldie?
Sure. I just have another book recommendation. I've been reading this book called Frankly, We Did Win This Election by Michael Charles Bender, who's a Wall Street Journal reporter. And it's all the great inside stuff from the Trump administration and all the like bungling and deceit and backstabbing. Very well written.
That's awesome.
I will endlessly consume every political book about a failed campaign, and this is a great one in that genre.
Love it.
Okay. And my high note is, I don't know if anybody loves the Foo Fighters, but one of Stu's best friends and his wife is one of my best friends, Josh Fries, is now the new drummer for the Foo Fighters.
Whoa,
so,
nice.
Yeah, and they had this big It was sort of like a rehearsal that they had filmed and aired live for the fans to show who the new drummer was. And it out came out Chad Smith and Tommy Lee, you know, sort of making you think that they were the new drummers.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to Josh, and it was, he's just an amazing powerhouse. And so we're very happy for them. And, you know, congratulations to the Foo Fighters.
Let me ask, though.
Yeah.
Because Dave Grohl himself plays the drums.
One of the greatest of all time.
And I remember going to Foo Fighters show years ago, and, you know, Taylor was playing, and then Dave Grohl came and also played drums.
Yeah.
Is it, and maybe you can't divulge this, is it a little annoying that you're playing the drums, but then this guy is going to come and go, I also play the drums? And you're like, well, you're not, I mean, either play the drums or play the guitar or sing.
Yeah.
Like, pick one.
I think it's really intimidating because he is, because
he's good.
Known, well, he's known to be like maybe one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
Of like rock drummers. So I think it's very intimidating. And I think that with Josh, he's also known as that. So I think it was sort of, I don't know. It's interesting to think of their chemistry with them. But
oh boy.
Yeah.
Well, get us
headline.
Good
here we
access.
Go.
Get us backstage. And you know Alec will, during the show, run up to them and go, can you guys do the podcast?
Do you want
to
be on the podcast?
And I hope this isn't a bad time, but I've had a bourbon. I'm really feeling it. You want to do
zone.
A podcast?
I'm in the zone. What is this impersonation of me? I sounded like
it's when you,
70s,
you
like,
think you're Edward like, I've had the perfect amount of alcohol, and then you show the director showing the audience POV, like, I was wondering if you had a... Do a podcast. I know you're really busy, but we just love to have you. We can talk about whatever you want.
I'm so proud of the waspy mumble acquired through alcohol. True. Oh, that's encouraging.
I've had the perfect amount to drink. Yeah, you drink. We love to have you.
Why don't you come up and see us sometime? Oh, well, that was a fun week this week.
Great.
Good top five, good high notes, great with Ike, some so-so Johnny jokes, and of course, the Dana Walden news.
Yes.
And Dana, if you've listened this long, send me another email with a pound sign, and that's it. All right. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, two, for being awesome,
thank
and
you.
We will talk to you again next week.
I got nothing.
That was fun.
And it stops right now.
Don't fucking undercut me, kid. Hey, look at me. Don't fucking do that shit.